one podcast, mining the Magic the Gathering community for salt. This is the Howling Salt Mine.
It's the Howling Salt Mine. The Howling Salt Mine.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Howling Salt Mine podcast, the podcast where we delve into those salty, salty minds of the Magic the Gathering community, find the salty stories, the salty posts, those salty confessionals that we love, put them in our mind cart, and bring them right back up to you, our dear prospectors at home. As always, I'm your host, Sam, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Mike and Tony. Say hey, guys.
What up, what up, what up?
Howdy ho.
Howdy ho, indeed.
Yay.
See, I remembered, Mike.
But wait.
And before we go any further, I am going to shout out our nice tier patrons. Thank you for being so nice.
Nice.
And this week we have Alex Balix, Creen Bean, Hephaestus Bolts, Prime Speaker Florian, Yafe Judge, Dr. Black, Accidental TPK, and Royal Flood. Thank you for being so nice.
Hey. Beep, 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 beep.
Also, before we jump into our little preamble here, I just want to mention that Google Podcasts is going away. It's just like straight up going away, and I think they will funnel things to YouTube Music, which I guess is like YouTube, but where just audio goes to live. I don't really know the ins and outs, but I do know that Google Podcasts is going away. So if you, dear listener, are listening right now on Google Podcasts, download another podcast app. Yeah, stop doing that. You will want to find a new podcast app. And I would recommend Spotify. It is the place where most of our listeners are. It's a fantastic application. It has a great algorithm to find new podcasts. It's what I mostly listen on. Not sponsored, by the way.
#sponsored.
And if you're looking for like an independent podcast app, I would recommend Downcast. Also, not sponsored.
#sponsored. Sponsored. I'd recommend iHeartRadio, actually.
Really?
0.01% of listeners use iHeartRadio.
That one, man. Don't use fucking that one.
Unless you heart radio.
Unless you heart radio, then you should.
Yeah.
I feel like iHeartRadio is owned by Ticketmaster or something. I don't think that's a good corporation to support.
I didn't even know it was still real. I feel like I've seen it like at some point in my life, but
yeah,
I didn't know it's still around.
It's still doing something. But yeah, I've been meaning to say that. I figured I would say it. Oh, and you know what else? It's been so long since we have actually said this at the beginning of an episode. If you have a salty story, you can email it to us at our Gmail, thehowlingsaltmine@gmail.com, or you can submit it on our website, howlingsaltmine.com or thehowlingsaltmine.com. There's a form you can fill out and submit a salty story. I've been getting questions.
Well, you better
from people.
Not say it at the end.
Dude, I've been getting questions from people where they're like, where can I send the salty story? And I'm like, motherfucker, I say it every episode.
Well, those fuckers don't get to send it because they're not in the 30% and they didn't fucking listen. So get wrecked.
Yeah, are you punching out at the end of every preamble? There's shit at the end of every episode, guys. You got to listen to the end.
I literally would have been like, listen to a full episode and then at me.
Oh, just wanted to throw that out. Also, we have playmats now. We've had them for a while. But again, if you're not listening to the end of an episode, you're not going to know that we have spectacular, big, thick playmats produced by the lovely guys over at Jank Mats.
Yeah.
So check that shit out. It's in our show notes. What are you doing? You're lacking. You're slacking.
They're not reading either. That's what I'm hearing.
They're pretty unanimously agreed. Remarkable quality.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the feedback that we've gotten from everybody that has purchased one so far.
Yeah. They are thick as fuck. The art is incredibly crispy. They may be too thick for your current play tube mat holder. That which is like an actual thing. So but check them out.
They sell cheap tubes as well.
Yeah.
So if you really wanted one, you could grab one.
Then they're good prices. Check it out. Go check it out. Do us a favor. Go check it out.
Where should they check it out?
Jankmats.com.
Nice. Is it /howlingsaltmine? Do we have a URL?
I was going to say /Alex Allman, but it would have been a lie. Like, I didn't know if it was true.
Yeah.
It definitely is in the show notes. And if I'm going to say a URL right now and you're going to listen to it and type it in, that's madness. Do not do that. Just click on the link.
Fucking do that.
Yeah, I absolutely want letter by that. Letter, Sam. Letter by letter.
HTTPS.
Write this down. Listener, write this down. Get your pencil and paper.
/:// core:// www.
It's jankmats.com/playmats/OLS/products/the-howling-saltmine-logo-playmat.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
I hope you got that.
If you didn't type that in just now, you don't love us.
And tell them Sam sent ya. So what's new with you guys?
I finally started assembling. I bought a Lego mock, my own creation of Majora's Mask Skull Kid that was just like on Rebrickable. I found a deep part of the internet where you can just like find like creations that people have put together. The pain in the ass is buying all the parts, but like the instructions they provide are like really great and easy to follow, but you wind up buying like 80% of the parts from one vendor. It's almost like TCG Player. And then like you go and you get 10 other packages from random people, all on PayPal. I don't even know the kind of neck beards that I'm buying this shit from. Like,
dude, you're probably buying them from like a very organized kid that's like, I'm going to pawn off all of these pieces that they've inherited.
It could be that. I've had it for a hot second and I finally started putting it together.
Hell yeah.
But I did have the issue of I put like 90% of it together and then realized I was missing a singular part that, to be honest, the way the system works, I couldn't even tell if I did order it or not. I was like, it's not even worth it trying to like find if I ordered this and it was supposed to come. Because also you realize that Legos are like dirt ass fucking cheap.
I was about to ask, what's the like most pennies, expensive, right? Lego piece that you own?
There was one that was like $10 or something. All of the Legos was like 50. So like there's one piece that was just like hyper rare and old and hard to find. And it was like an old Bionicle piece, actually. So I probably had one growing up, but I just don't have it anymore. But in general, like things are literally on the order of like a couple cents.
Yeah.
For like the 4x2 bricks, like the one you classically think of.
Yep.
Are like fucking dirt cheap. So I put all that shit together and I actually received the last piece today. And so that is what I've been doing back in my happy place, fucking nice, putting together little Lego-y boys.
So what is a mock? You mentioned that.
Yeah.
So is this like a design that somebody created for a model and like put it online and you download it and follow it?
Correct. So mock stands for my own creation. And so it's just people on the internets who like to design Lego things, right? So there's like all the sets that Lego themselves make. These are like unsanctioned sets that you can buy where they just give you the instructions. And there's a shit ton of them that are free. Like I just got a hyperbolic time chamber from Dragon Ball Z that's free. I'm like, oh man, I've gone down a fucking rabbit hole.
You have.
There's like so many things that you can buy. And again, like so many that are free, I just find it like as such a soothing activity. But pretty soon I'm going to have nowhere to put all this shit that I've bought. I'll have to start like taking things apart that I have made. But yeah, on Rebrickable, I think it was actually TPK who had mentioned it to me. There was some sites in like my recreations and stuff. And I was like, yo, hell yeah. And then I started looking into it more. And there's some that are like fucking shitty, you know?
Like, oh, I'm sure.
Anybody can put stuff up there. But there's some that are like really fucking cool. And so I found this one from like somebody who's actually been on like Lego Masters and some of these shows that are out there in the world, like won it. And then he's got like some, it was like $15 for his design. I was like, dude, I would have paid too much money for this. So like, I'm glad that it was $15. I did that until like 2 a.m. the other day, just because I was like, this is fun. I always start it and I'm like, I'll just do a little bit. And then I'm like, it's done. I finished it. I can't do things in like small doses. It's just how it is. But that's my thing.
Love
that's
that,
that's my story I'm sharing.
Nice.
Do you guys want to know the two most expensive Lego things that you can purchase and how much money they are? Because I just looked it up. These are the most valuable Lego pieces.
Pieces or kits?
Like pieces.
It's sort of a piece. You'll get it when I read it.
Interesting.
Is there a singleton? Is it a singleton piece? Or is it something there's many of?
Is a minifig one piece or is it Do you count that as multiple?
I mean, minifigs.
Minifigs.
Those motherfuckers could be rare. There's like fucking sheep that are super rare that I think are really expensive.
So you want to hear the most expensive one?
Wait, I want to guess a number.
Yeah, guess the price.
I am going to guess.
Mike, you can also guess if you'd like.
Yeah.
Mike, you guess first. I have a number in my head.
That's not how this works. That's never. Right. It's never been how this works.
I'm going to say 500. I'm going to say 500 for a singular thing that some collector out there would be like, I would pay that much.
$500 for the most expensive minifig. Okay.
I'm going to do $320.
So the San Diego Comic-Con 2013 Spider-Man, only 350 in total were ever made available.
Oh no.
The current value of it is $16,829.63.
Oh, my.
So look through your collections out there, folks. the next one down is the Tahu mask from New York Comic Con 2014. It was a VIP Bionicle event exclusive, and only 100 were distributed. And that is $14,818.
That's so much more than I would have even remotely guessed.
So that's why I asked if it was like a singleton. Like a what I was asking with, is it a singleton? Is like, was it a one of one?
Yeah, you're asking if it was serialized, baby. You're being like, are there 100 of these bad boys?
I thought you were saying like, is it a single brick or something?
That is how I read that.
The thing that falls after that is a castle set that was released in 1978, which is probably one of the first castle sets ever released from Lego.
Got it.
And it retailed for $50, and now the value of it is almost $11,000.
My God.
And it grow all of these grow by like 20% annually.
Oh yeah, wow. I believe it.
This is a great website. I'm gonna spend a lot of time on this website.
Send me the link, put it in the show notes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
It's called brickeconomy.com.
I'm not going to go to it right now because then I won't pay attention.
Because then you're going to, because then next episode, you're going to be telling us about the new San Francisco Comic-Con Spider-Man limited edition that you recently that you recently own.
It's a lot of Comic-Con minifigs that are like $7,000 to $8,000 to $10,000. It's like crazy, man.
Scroll like way down just out of curiosity to where it hits like closer to like a 500 kind of number, because I feel like
I'm gonna have to
those are like really the extremes far. Right, but like on the other end of the spectrum, I would be surprised if it was like that that like kind of middle class of just like a brick that was printed in not printed, you know, made for a given set that a bunch of it existed of, but they're harder to find because it was only maybe one set that was ever releasing it. I'm like curious what that kind of a number would look like, but
this website doesn't seem to show me like individual brick prices, unfortunately. That's what I was originally searching for, because I might have talked about this on the show before, but I remember that there was it was some video I came across on Instagram where this guy was talking about like brick economy and how this one certain Lego brick had just gone up in price a whole bunch. He was buying them like stock features.
Like you were buying bubbling mucks.
Yeah, exactly. He was like speculating on a brick, and he was like, I think this brick is going to be really popular and expensive, so I'm going to buy 300 of this brick. And then he probably sells it like how you buy your bricks, Tony.
Yeah, to scrubs like me online.
Yeah, exactly. Crazy, dude. I love that.
I was almost throwing stupid money at things, because the thing is, like, it's the way you buy them, it's global. So if you don't set it to be from the States, then it will pick the cheapest person anywhere, but then all of a sudden you get a shipping cost that's like fucking $40.
That makes sense.
For this singular brick that's 1 cent, and you're like, that's not how I want to do this. Where's my cart optimizer? Come on.
So it's exactly like TCG Player.
It literally is. It's pretty crazy. Which is honestly probably why I was able to buy it, because I would have been too frustrated otherwise. But my Magic the Gathering experience has led me to the ability to buy bricks online.
Yeah. It's enhanced your purchasing abilities.
Yes.
Yeah.
It definitely has.
Well, one of my favorite Lego sets is the Lego Salt and Pepper set.
Is that real?
It is a real thing.
Oh, is it?
It's not actually a Lego set. It's just like
That's actually your favorite, though?
No, I'm just trying to do a transition. I'm sorry, dude. It's Bionicles. I love Bionicles.
Fair.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Salt is frustration.
Wait. Settle down. Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Yes?
What is salt?
Thank you, Tony. That's a great question. I appreciate you asking. Nice. Everybody, salt is frustration in the game, as we like to say. It's an umbrella term, and it really captures everything from just being frustrated in a Magic game. Maybe somebody's a little bit annoying, a little bit whiny at the table, all the way up to like rage scooping. People are countering your commander over and over again. They're staxing you out in a casual game. You're like, why the fuck am I even playing this game if you're not going to let me play fucking Magic? Or, you know, maybe you're playing a CDH game and you just keep misplaying over and over and over again. That's a different kind of salt. Or you kept a really shitty hand, and then two turns in, you're like, I wish we could restart this game, but I'm stuck. I did that the other day. That was fucking awful, man.
You got in, you're like, I've done the wrong.
Yeah.
This isn't it.
Yeah, I had a game where I mulliganed to 5, and for some reason I didn't want to go to 4, and normally I do, but my five was bad. I got fooled by the Gaia's Cradle. I was like, oh, I can drop a Kinnan on turn 2. And then we started playing and I was like, oh, this green source is a Gaia's Cradle and I have no other creatures.
Yeah. Nice.
So everyone was very confused with my first few turns where I just only was playing lands and they were like, what are you doing?
Not a lot.
Yeah, not too much this game. So salt comes in many different forms, from the small grains to the full shakers. And we talk about the full spectrum of salt here on the show so we can learn about it and hopefully not be salty ourselves in a future game. It's an educational podcast, as we like to say. So I got some salty stories here, guys. Should we dive on in?
Let's do it.
On down in there. Let's
fucking do it.
Just do it.
This first one comes to us by way of our lovely website that I mentioned at the top of the show. And this one comes to us from our buddy, Jake. Thanks, Jake. And this post is titled, LGS replaces Pioneer Scene with a pile of salt. And since we're all scrubs and we don't play Pioneer, we looked it up ahead of time. And it's everything from Return to Ravnica moving forward. Interesting.
We looked it up literally because I was like, what the fuck is Pioneer? Like, I know it exists, but like, come on, what the fuck is that shit? Like, who actually plays that?
Jake plays. Jake plays, Tony.
Well, fuck you, Jake.
No, he's the listener. No. All right. And the story goes, howdy, y'all. Love the show. It always adds some nice seasoning to my workday. Here's the roller coaster story of how my LGS mostly killed our Pioneer scene just as I got into the format. I've been playing Magic for less than a year, mostly Commander with a pot of friends for my Frisbee team. I tried out some Pauper to dip my toes into Constructed, but there wasn't a Pauper night that I could regularly make in my city, and I wasn't having a great time with it. After hearing about this, my teammate decided to introduce me to Pioneer and get back into it himself. He lends me a deck and takes me to our LGS, and we have a great time. It's a perfect storm. The regulars are cool. The LGS is within biking distance of me, and it's on Thursdays when I'm free. I get totally sucked into the format and play it there all September. My friend and I have some stuff come up 2 weeks in a row, but we're psyched to go back with some new decks we put together while we were out. We roll up to the store, and to our dismay, they'd taken Pioneer off of the weekly event roster.
Whoa.
Those monsters.
Assholes. How dare they not know what Pioneer is or respect it as a format? It didn't fire the week before, which means they didn't have 6 or more players for 3 rounds of Swiss, so they cut it. This event had been active every week for over a year, according to my friend, and the LGS decides to kill it after a single slow week. My friend rallies the Pioneer regulars to reach out to the owner, and they put it back on the calendar. Hey, that's great. The next 2 weeks, we play, but it gets cut again after Thanksgiving. When I asked why, I was told it hasn't been getting good numbers lately, especially last week. What a load of BS. It was a holiday and the shop was closed. That's fucking ridiculous. Our numbers have dwindled since they stopped running the event. A real, if you build it, they will come situation, I guess. We found a comic shop on the other side of town that's willing to host us and do prize packs, and I hope the scene can get going again there. I'm extra salty because in the past, I've been the only one at the LGS for Pauper 2 weeks in a row, and they never stopped hosting it. They have Commander there every night of the week, too, so it's not like the shop was empty that particular Thursday. But most of all, I'm frustrated that I've got to replace my 5-minute bike ride with an hour drive through traffic.
Oof.
The salt is real.
Yeah, that's tough.
That's rough, man. You know, we talked a lot about LGSs a couple episodes ago, and I think this is kind of nature of the beast when it comes to LGSs. I will say this is pretty extreme. You know, it takes time to organize these things. It takes time and effort and energy to, like, set aside the space, have prizing, monitor the groups, invest in that small community that might be playing that format. And if you're not seeing a return on that energy investment, you may just consider cutting it and you may not want to do it anymore. Mm. Like, it sucks, but that is just a thing that's going to happen. Now, this is a pretty extreme example. You know, you had one or two slow weeks and they cut it, and one of them was a fucking Thanksgiving week.
Yeah. Well, I'm almost wondering if that's just like a, sometimes, whether it's fair or not, it's easier to just tell people that rather than to go into the whole like business case of like, look, you know, I've only got the same people doing Pioneer. Like, I've got a wider audience doing other stuff. It's not worth my time and energy to like invest in this like event. Cause like nobody wants to hear that. You're like, I don't care. Yeah. Like, I have fun doing this. Like, I want to do it.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's not that much energy for them. Right. But like, there's probably a lot of stuff you don't necessarily see or know. Because he has to allocate like table space that could be used for other things, right?
Yeah.
And, like, so it goes deep, but I fucking get it. Like, if the excuse is, man, fucking nobody showed up last week, and you're like, yeah, dipshit,
it was Thanksgiving.
Like, no one was here. I was eating turkey. Like, come on. Like, I feel you there for sure. Like,
we're celebrating the original pioneers, the pioneers to America.
Yeah,
the pilgrims.
Pioneer is great, but it's not got nothing on pie. Also, so
hey, pie and ears of corn, and
ears of corn, nice.
Oh man, we have fun here, guys. We have
a good time.
Do you guys have corn on Thanksgiving?
I don't actually. I don't have corn on Thanksgiving.
Like fucking anybody is.
I do not. No, I'm not much of a corn eater in general, man. Get some.
I
teeth.
Like corn.
I like corn.
That's because you're eating it wrong. You got to watch me eat a fucking ear of corn, and then you're gonna be like, I've seen the way.
Do you pick the kernels out one at a time?
Basically, but with my teeth.
Do you stick it in your mouth and pull it out like a fish skeleton on a cartoon?
I wish. That'd be cool. I'm telling you, next time I have an ear corn, I'm going to post it in the Discord.
Yeah, take a video.
And people are going to be like, well, the video might take too long. I don't need people to watch me eat it, but like you will see a clean ear.
I need people to watch you eat it.
Yeah, I need to see the technique. because the problem isn't that I can't get a clean ear of corn. It's that when I'm chomping it, it's getting all crammed up in my teeth.
No, I understand, you know? But this is what I'm telling you. Like, the technique is, you don't have the technique. That's all it is.
Well, you got to show me the technique with a video.
Are you just slurping the kernels down whole, though? Because, like, you got to chew these? Them, right?
Yeah, but, like, that they get in your teeth when you're, like, fucking gnawing at the thing off
yes,
the...
Yes, that is true. When I'm using my teeth like a plow to remove the corn.
The thing is, you got to get, like, a couple out, and then you can
yeah,
just,
you
like...
you got to do them as, like, a... It's less a plow, more a... lever.
I cannot imagine this. I'm trying so hard. I cannot imagine the mechanism.
Anyway, let's
for
circle back. There's no corn in this story, so.
No, I think Jake can take a back seat. Actually, we have some corn to discuss here.
We have some corn eating strategies that feel
we're getting all the
they
way
matter
to the
a great deal.
It matters a great deal.
It matters a great deal.
Dude, I will say, like, yeah. I don't eat corn often, but it is good. Like, a good ear of corn is fucking tasty.
Oh yeah.
You guys ever eat it like straight off the plant raw? Like grab it, rip it off, shuck it, and eat it right there? Because that is like, it's so sweet, dude. It's like very
good.
Like
on a fucking farm? Like
sometimes I am. When I am, that's when I do it.
You're not eating the random city corn.
City? Can you imagine if there is city corn, man?
So in the planter outside of my house, there's like, it's like in the front of the house, there's like ferns and shit planted there, and there's this long, I just thought weed, and my dad actually grew up on a farm, and so he's like, that's corn. And I was like, what? And then like a couple months later, there's a fucking ear of corn, and
damn.
I tried to eat it, and it wasn't good. It was
That is the thing though. Sometimes corn is fucking nasty.
Yeah, I don't think it was the fault that like I wasn't taking good care of it. You know, I was just like, I'm gonna eat this someday, so like maybe I'll water it once in a while. It was a sad looking ear by the time I picked it. But,
it was city corn. It really was.
It was city corn for sure.
Oh, man.
Anyway, what was this story about?
Salt. I get salty when an LGS disappears as well. I had a similar, I mean, actually quite different, but I guess
but tell us similar enough.
I'll tell you anyway. So I was getting ready to move to Malden, and I had been in Malden before and knew that there was a game store.
Corn
there used
mine?
To be like a
gotcha.
A corn mine. There used to be a corn mine in Malden. No, a game store in Malden. And that had like a bunch of table space. I'd like gone in there one time, like 10 years ago, to like buy a booster box at one time. I remember seeing it thinking, oh, that's cool. So then I was moving over into Malden and learned it had closed. Like I literally like moved my stuff in that first week. I was like, oh, I'm going to walk over to that game store now, like get excited about it. Walked over, gone. Like just a sign on the door. Like, yeah, we've moved. Like one town over, and
what was the game store?
Heartbroken.
Do you remember the name?
I think it might have been like Hobby Bunker,
dude. Hobby Bunker, yes. That okay. I've been there before. It was a fucking dope store, dude.
It was great. Yeah, I remember it. I remember, and I when I was looking at Malden, I remember being like, "Oh, I'm excited to come here. This place is cool."
Yeah, I used to go there and play like miniature games with friends. It was a really, really dope spot. That's a shame that they closed.
Yeah, so they closed. There's a New England Comics in the area that kind of like has picked up a couple of the events. I think like the Commander and sometimes the drafts and stuff,
yeah.
Like pre-releases they'll run and stuff. But it's not the same as like a whole, it's a comic book store, not a game store.
You're kind of strapped for space.
But it's a bummer when you think you have like a great game store in your area, or when you're moving away from one, or when you feel like, you know, you're not welcome in one anymore like this one. But the bummer also is about like going to the other store. Like, I guess you could just play with the people that want to play at this store still and like keep the convenient commute, but I guess everyone else isn't going if they take it off the calendar.
Well, yeah, because now you're taking on the role of, are you going to attempt to organize it now and like get all those people? Because without somebody driving it, it just won't happen. You know,
That's true. The thing. Unless you're like already in contact with all those people, like online or personally, you're not going to be able to pull them back in.
Right.
That's the thing that's a real bummer is like sometimes when an LGS closes or when it stops running a certain event or supporting a certain game or product, the play group centered around that game or that format just gets like scattered to the four winds. And you're sort of like, okay, well,
yeah,
where did everyone end up? Where are we going to play? And that's also when a lot of people change the game that they're playing. Like I remember when I've talked about it a bunch, I used to play this miniature game called War Machine. And when that game kind of died, a bunch of people started to pick up Warhammer 40K. Other people were picking up Warhammer Fantasy. Other people were getting into Magic. And it was sort of like, man, I have like a financial decision I need to make now too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
Which is also a bummer. Like if you've built a Pioneer deck, I mean, I'm sure a lot of those cards can be repurposed in other formats, but it's still an investment to get there, to get to a point where you have a playable deck in that new format. And like, if you've invested the time and money to build a deck and get good at that format and understand the meta, and then your local meta just kind of vanishes, I mean, you're kind of screwed. Like, we're very lucky with Commander, where there's a big online community and obviously a massive in-person community at LGSs. It's the biggest format right now. But I don't think the 1v1 formats are as popular to play over Spell Table and online. Like, I never ever see that when I'm looking at Spell Table. It's always Commander. It's never like a 1v1 format that people want to do over webcam. So your options are really limited to just in-person play.
Or Magic Online, which I think is the other place that people play like online.
I think that's why it's not popular on Spell Table, because it's like, why would you play 1v1 on Spell Table when you could just play Arena? Like,
yeah. Or
it's
MTGO.
It's just like infinitely better. Yeah. And like, the backup is MTGO. Yeah.
But even that is like a money investment. You know what I mean? So,
or it can be. Like in theory, you could do it all for free, but like, what do we think about the salt rating here on this one?
It's kind of like a sad salt.
Yeah, it is. It's the salt of tears, you know?
Yeah.
It's not a lot, but it's in there.
I think it's also kind of the salt of like, does this ever happen to you guys where you have like a bag of road salt to like salt your driveway and you like put it away in your shed or whatever? And then like the next winter you go to check on it and a bunch of it is just like missing because over the course of the year, it's just like gotten wet and dissolved and vanished. And you're like, I thought there was salt there and now it's fucking gone. And it's just totally gone. And you got to go out and buy more. I hate it when
that
happens.
Is it happening when you need it, though?
Yeah, it's usually happening when I need it.
Yeah, you're like, I need to put this on the driveway now. Yeah. And you're like, actually, yeah, fucked. Oh, I will trip on it first, then get in the car, go buy more and come back. Cool.
Yep.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah, and that short walk to the shed becomes a long drive to the hardware store. there we go. I stuck the landing.
There we go. You did stick the landing on that one.
I saw the doubt in your eyes. You were both like, what the fuck are you talking about? I was like, oh. Gotta figure it out, Sam.
There. Whether it was intentional or not is still up for debate, but
don't analyze it too much.
Perhaps we should venture just, further into the mind.
Let's just move on.
Carrying on.
Yeah.
All right. So this next one comes to us from the saltiest pirate in Tampa Bay.
Well,
nice.
And the post is titled The Saltiest Pirate. And this is a Gmail submission to our lovely Gmail address. Ooh, and it's a long one. Let's buckle up. The story goes, hey guys, love this show. I seriously enjoy hearing other people's salty stories so much because I seem to have a lot of my own and I'm working on being the saltiest baby less often. It's an admirable goal.
I really thought they were going to be like, I'm trying to be the saltiest baby in my pod. Like, period. I want to bring that salt to them, you know?
That'd be a good question. How do I become the saltiest baby? I'd have a lot of advice to give.
Anyway.
So the story continues, was playing at my LGS Commander League last night, and I was paired up against my nephew playing Zuladok Void Gorger. He has an extensive reputation for whining about being focused out when he plays, but his two decks are the Ur-Dragon and Zuladok, so it's absolutely deserved. Also, not really relevant, but I have been driving him to the shop and paying his entry fee for months just so he can play the little ungrateful shit. And two other players were also playing, both playing the newer Pantlaza Sun-favored decks. We'll call them Grant and Malcolm. All the decks had apparently been tuned up considerably. I was running my Don Andres Theft deck, which is also pretty spicy and salt-inducing when it's able to do its thing. The game progresses, as you would expect, with my nephew, Grant, and Malcolm all cascading into bigger, scarier Eldrazi and dinosaurs every turn. My nephew got set back a bit when I was able to cast one of my opponent's spells with an early Ragavan hit to blow up his mana crypt. Everyone at the table agreed this was a smart play since he had managed to cast Zuladok by turn two. Mm. Hold on. How much does fucking Zuladok cost?
I assume it's more than two mana.
It's six. Okay.
Damn.
Six mana turn two with the mana crypt. That's pretty fucking good still.
Pretty fucking good. Six mana. That's four turns worth of fucking mana. We'd be pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
CDH players over here being like,
about. Yeah.
It's not enough. I need more.
Mana Crypt, Jeweled Lotus, and a land. You could do that turn one if you really try.
Okay.
Especially if the land's a fucking guy's cradle.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Grant was popping off and had a substantial board of big, scary dinosaurs, including Zakama, Gishath, and Ravenous Tyrannosaurus. He was really only kept in check because Malcolm, who hadn't done much that game, get fucked fourth player, had a Khinjali Sunwing in play, so he was slowing everyone down a bit. I think Khinjali Sunwing stops ETBs. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I feel like get fucked fourth player is truly a Howling Salt Mine thing.
It really is.
And we need like a fucking sticker or a shirt or something.
Yeah, we need a shirt.
Like...
We need something. We do need something.
It could be like little starred things or whatever, but like we fucking need that.
Dude, it could be like an F and then three salt shakers and then an ED. So it's like implied.
It could be shit like that.
Yeah, get farted.
Get farted, dude. After a few brutal swings from Grant's dinosaurs and the Eldrazi, it seemed almost certain that Grant will win this game. I'm at 10 life, and everyone else hasn't taken much damage. I managed to kill Zakama and Gishath by stealing Grant's Ravenous Tyrannosaurus with an Agent of Treachery. I was beginning to think I might be able to hold out a bit longer. A couple turns later, I cast Breach the Multiverse and steal the Khinjali Sunwing, a Flayer of Loyalties, and Roaming Throne from their graveyards, and the Agent of Treachery from my own graveyard. It was an insane turn, but this is where I fucked up. While the agent of treachery came back, I should have taken Malcolm's skull spore nexus, but it had a paragraph of text on it, and I didn't realize what it did at the time. Instead, I took Zuladoc from my nephew, which is not a nice thing to do, I know, but he's playing Eldrazi Cascade, so fuck him. And then it says, no, fuck me. Mm. Near the end of my turn, Grant starts whispering to my nephew, leave 4 mana up when you end your turn. My nephew has a rogue's passage buried in his messy stack of lands. Malcolm has Skull Spore Nexus, which at the bottom of its paragraph of text allows him to double any creature's power. Grant has some 5/5 dinosaur, doesn't matter what it is. He convinces my nephew to make it unblockable and convinces Malcolm to double its power. The three conspirators all team up and take me out. I pack my shit and start another game with other friends at the store, but I was so salty. I have never been so blatantly collaborated against by all three of the other players at the table. Did I deserve it after stealing all their shit? Yeah, me. Yeah, but I'm still salty.
Yeah, nice.
I don't think it talked about ages or anything, but I can't help but, like, when I hear nephew, just think, like, okay,
he's like 8,
adult my age, and like 7-year old in this store, like, just trying to play their little dinosaurs and shit, and they're just like,
oh man. I don't know if we need to read any of these cards. I think we generally got the gist. If people don't know what Rogue's Passage does, you can pay 4 mana to give any creature unblockable. But everything else was pretty well described.
I mean, there's nothing sweeter than seeing the death on the table and pointing it out, yeah, and being like, hey, that person that just fucked us, guess what? If I do this and you do that and you attack, they're dead.
So sweet.
I've had a moment in a game where, like, Mike, I think, went to combat and I made one of his creatures unblockable and he like killed Nick with it or something. And it's just, it's like a good feeling, you know?
Yeah.
Like, with a fucking, what is that card? Key to the City.
Oh, fucking Key to the City.
Cards. Yeah, Key to the City is good. It gives big, like, Godzilla and Kong vibes, you know, where it's like, yeah, you're these two big monsters, but there is a bigger monster that you have to deal with, so like, you gotta team up and scrap together your shit. If you're getting an agent of treachery and play twice, you deserve to get something Rogue's Passage in on you.
yeah you've done an evil deed at that point.
A treacherous deed.
truly. It seems like it was well-deserved salt. Like, you did steal a bunch of their shit, like 3 or 4 things. And like Mike said, that's the second time you've cast an Agent of Treachery, so you've already stolen shit. I mean, you know, it makes sense. I will say, playing against 3 decks that are all cascading into fucking value, you were probably fighting for your life this whole game. Like, that sounds like a nightmare matchup, dude. I would not want to play into that pod. Everyone is just like doubling and tripling their board state every single turn. It's like disgusting.
Yeah, and those turns all take like 20 fucking minutes.
they really do, but holy shit, I love that. Also, I do want to say that I think we have to retract the get fucked fourth player, because there was such a team up. Like Malcolm wasn't irrelevant to the story at all. Malcolm had the thing that doubled power. Yeah, and played like a critical piece in killing you.
It's just a different kind of get fucked fourth player, because you are the fourth player. You got fucked. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, you did. Oh, man, you did.
Flew too close to the sun, took one too many things, and just like that.
Your wings of wax, Icarus, I'm sorry. Daedalus can't save you now.
This moment can really suck, though, when, like, you don't think you're the biggest threat. When 3 people conspire against you and you're like, I was the least close to winning, it's no good. It's definitely different if you feel like,
if it's undeserved.
Yeah, if it's undeserved.
Yeah, but that's one of 2 scenarios. Like, usually if the other 3 players are doing it, like, you did something that got you there. Like, you didn't get there for no reason.
Yeah,
right?
You did enough. You did enough. It's true.
But at the same time, the other scenario is if you're very close to those other people and they fuck you because they're just like, you know what? It's Tony. We'll just fucking kill him.
Yeah, who would do that?
Yeah, who would do that?
Yeah, who would ever fucking do that?
Man, I really do love Rogue's Passage, and I feel like in my mind I'm always like, yo, this can hit other people's creatures too, and it would be so cool if I could do that. But you have to hold up 5 mana to turn on a Rogue's Passage.
Yeah, effectively.
That's why you just need Key to the City. You got to discard a card, but I love those types of effects where you can target a creature.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of decks that'll build and not even realize that you have a card in there that does that. But like,
yeah,
there's a non-zero amount of times where that can like really impact a game. Like just targeting somebody else's creatures or whatever with a spell that you have or an activated ability. And like, I love those moments.
Kessig Wolf Run is my favorite of that type.
Mm.
So Kessig Wolf Run, if people don't know, you can pay X, a red and a green, and tap it and give target creature plus X plus zero and trample, which is awesome because if you have the mana up, you can pump someone else's creature enough to like totally kill somebody. But if you just have a couple mana up, you don't have to put anything into X and you can just give it trample. And sometimes that's enough.
With the red and green. I was going to say that is what's great about it, because a lot of times somebody will chump block with like a Wanwan on like a fucking 14-14 and they're like, cool, I'm safe. And you're like, actually, I'm going to give it trample. I'm going to do that right now. And usually the other person's like, really?
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's not usually received really well. Your reaction there has confirmed that is what I am going to do, actually.
But that is also a great way to deflect all of the salt onto you as the person activating that shit. Like, if Tony attacks me with a 14-14 and Mike makes it unblockable, I'm not mad at Tony. I'm mad at Mike. Man.
What do we think about the salt rating here on this one?
It's a good one, man. I mean, I think there's a lot of salt. I think overall, it's a pretty happy story. It has a good end. It's got like, I think you got your just desserts in the situation. You had a really crazy, powerful turn. You flexed a little bit too hard, flew a little too close to the sun, like we said, stole maybe too many things. And then everyone had this opportunity to gang up on you and just took it. And you might feel a little salty for that, but they were probably feeling salty too. So I think it is a salty game, but the scales of salt are balanced.
Yeah, I think I agree. It's kind of a nice level of salt. It's a good flavoring.
Well, should we move on to the next one, guys?
Let's do it.
That was some good salt. Let's keep going.
Let's do it.
So this next one comes to us from Patreon and comes to us from our patron Straffa. Thanks for the story, dude. And this post is titled "Rules Change Salt."
Ooh.
And the story goes, this is a tale from long ago in a distant land.
Nice.
Samurai Jack, anyone? Am I right?
Yeah.
You know, the guy who did the voice for Aku was the same guy who did the voice for fucking Uncle Iroh.
Iroh, yeah.
Mm.
I didn't know it, but as you started to say that, I was like, that's definitely who it was.
Legendary, dude. Fucking legendary. This is a tale from long ago. To set the scene, it was about mid-2014. When EDH became a regular night at my LGS, the majority of the people that showed up to play were legacy players that like to play high-powered decks very casually. There were the usual boogeyman of the time, which are Xur, Shroom, Uril, etc. However, the most popular by far was Purphoros, God of the Forge.
Hell yeah.
By today's standards, not a lot of people run enough removal, and even less back then. Once Perf hit the table, it was nearly guaranteed that he would stick, since you can play around him and keep him an indestructible non-creature enchantment. The only way that you could deal with any of the gods was, that's right, tucking them into the library via cards like Oblation or Hinder. Then, in 2015, the Rules Committee made an announcement that if a commander changes zones, you can always put them back into the command zone. For us EDH boomers that remember the change, I cannot recall a single person at the time that liked the change. So in protest, me and a buddy got together to craft a way to permanently deal with commanders. So we had Zedru the Greathearted as the commander for the colors, and also to pretend to be a group hug deck to give us time to set up the combo.
Nice.
The first card is Soul Scriptor that can change a creature into a non-creature enchantment. Notably, this step is not necessary to deal with the gods. LOL. Second is Liquid Metal Coating to turn it into a non-creature artifact. Third is Bludgeon Brawl to turn them into an equipment. Fourth is Volshock Battlemaster, who has an ETB that says equip all equipments. Then you need to make a token copy of the Battlemaster, with Cackling Counterpart or Kiki Jiki. Then you would phase the token Battlemaster out. Before Teferi's Protection was printed, when a token would phase out, it would cease to exist in the same way as if it were put into the graveyard or library. So the token phases out, no longer exists, and the equipment on it would just be stuck in phasing. I played the deck for a couple months and managed to do what was dubbed the FUCIP, fuck your commander in particular, combo about 7 times and always got a laugh when I managed to pull off the intense setup. The deck never really caused massive salt as it would abuse symmetrical card advantage, so it wouldn't be targeted and kind of just had EDH spirit of doing weird things with a bunch of cards that no one heard of.
I feel like I don't follow what happened. I guess I was tracking until you made it an equipment, but then you make a copy of it. But wouldn't it legend rule out the token?
I think we have some reading to do here.
Probably.
I think the main thing is turning it into an equipment with Bludgeon Brawl. So you turn it into an artifact with the liquid meta coding. Yeah. And then Bludgeon Brawl turns artifacts into equipments. So you've turned it into an equipment.
Well, first you have to turn it into an enchantment.
Well, if it's a god, it's already done that. So you turn it into an equipment. I think then you get them all and you equip them to something. And then you phase it out.
But you phase what out? All
you phase permanents? Out all your tokens and you've equipped the thing to a token.
Oh, so the token goes away and then the thing lives in exile?
Stays in phasing, not even in exile. Oh,
in phasing.
Phased out.
Is that not changing zones?
No.
Okay.
So Soul Sculptor turns target creature into an enchantment and it loses all of its abilities. Then you can liquid metal coding it into an artifact. Then with Bludgeon Brawl says each non-creature, non-equipment artifact is an equipment with equip X, where equipped creature gets +X/+0, where X is that artifact's converted mana cost. So it's critical to strip away the creature type, add the artifact type. Then you play Volshock Battlemaster, which has an ETB that says when Volshock Battlemaster comes into play, attach all equipment in play to it. Yeah. Then you make a token copy of it. Then you phase out the token copy.
Which also got the equip everything to it, so everything equips over to it. And then it dies, but like everything stays in phasing because that's how phasing works.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically back in the day when tokens would phase out, they would just kind of cease to exist, almost as if like a token was getting exiled or getting put into your graveyard.
I was going to say, don't tokens come back?
They do now. Now, like things that get phased out, everything comes back no matter what. Yeah,
gotcha.
What an extremely confusing combo.
Yeah.
I think the interesting part is like almost what I like about Commander. Anything you like, you can kind of make happen. Like this person liked the fact that they could nuke your commander and you couldn't have it anymore. Yeah. So, and then when that rule got changed, they were like, I want to still do that.
Yeah, I still want to do that. I still want to put that in a really impossible to access place.
Yeah. And like did it.
Yeah, and managed to do it. It's very, very interesting.
It is.
There are other ways to permanently get rid of commanders in games. I think like Rune of the Hidden Realm is like a perfect example where if it goes to exile, I think you can do something with the sequencing there, right?
I mean, you just have to put it into the command zone when it's put into exile.
Someone has to let it stay in exile.
And then,
with
Rune, and then you can then like you just end the turn or something.
Yeah, yeah. End the turn before it comes back in.
I would have felt real bad if one card did it and this person did it with like 10. Sam's like, actually, if you just do this.
Yeah, hey, scrub, there's actually an easier way of doing that.
No.
I do not miss the Tuck rule at all.
Did you ever play with it, though?
We never really had, like when I played Commander
the
in
answer
the early
is no!
days, we didn't really have like Chaos Warp or Oblation or things like that in our decks, you know? Like I didn't really have anything that was going to trigger the Tuck rule ever, so we never really played with it.
I'm pretty sure I have only played it in a world where like that didn't exist as part of it. And like I had heard of the Tuck rule, but like I'd never played a game where that was a factor.
Yeah, same.
It's just one of those things where like everybody hates change. So like everybody was playing it. I feel like there's like a natural thing to be like, we don't like this change. But I would say generally speaking now, I don't think anybody would be like, yeah, I want to go back to that. Like,
yeah, no fucking
like,
way.
I could just like lose my commander. Like I can't get it back. I can't do things. So it's like, I think it's definitely for the better. But I can see how it could have been a cheeky thing that you used to be able to do. And like when it gets taken away, you're kind of like, man.
Mm-hmm.
There was this episode of Command Zone, like a wicked long time ago, like a few years ago, I think, where they were talking about the Tuck Rule. And they said that like the meta back then, because of the Tuck Rule, it required every deck to run multiple sack outlets. If there's ever like a Chaos Warp or something, you could sack it and that would save your commander.
Gotcha.
Which is really weird. And I don't know. It's just strange. And we were even talking about this in our Discord the other day. People were talking about like old commander rules. And I guess like back before the legend rule got changed, a really effective way of killing your opponent's commander was to play like a phantasmal image and make a copy of it. Because the old legend rule was that there could only be one copy of a legendary creature on the entire board. So if you and I played the same legendary creature, yours would die when I played mine.
Really? That stayed around all the way into when Commander was around?
Yeah, I think so.
2013, it looks like, was when the legendary rule changed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 2013. So I was playing Commander before
that.
Yeah, then.
I mean, they were releasing Commander products by 2012, right?
I remember it was a weird thing because, like, if me and a friend had the same commander precon, we, like, could not play the mirror match because it would be like, well, if you play your commander, then my commander's going to die, and that's not going to be fun for either of us. So,
yeah.
But, like, the fact that you could play a clone and destroy your opponent's commander is, like, insane to me right now because of how clones have just become so prolific in every, you know, casual EDH or competitive EDH.
It applied to lands, too.
Dude, yeah. And remember the old Planeswalker rule where you could only have one of a certain Planeswalker?
Yeah, like super legendary.
Yeah, where it's like, oh, you have a Johnny Vengeant? Well, I just played a different Johnny, so your Johnny dies. Like, there can only be one
Johnny. I'm glad you chose a Johnny where, like...
This is the only one I can think of.
Like, nobody knows other Johnnies.
A Johnny, you know, the cat guy. I think that's the other one.
Obviously. Well,
less
this
vengeful.
One is confusing, but what do we think about the salt rating here?
I don't think there's any salt. I mean, it's more just like a very interesting salty interaction. I think if someone did this to me, I would be salty.
Yeah. It sounds like people enjoyed the novelty of it, though. I think if and it sounds like they kind of didn't play it forever. Like they built it as kind of this like, oh, yeah, well, if the rules changed, I'll play this. And it doesn't sound like that's a permanent fixture of their lineup from the way that story goes, which I think is great. I think that's a fun thing to do. If you want to build something really wacky, build it and play it for a little bit. But maybe it's not something you hold on to forever.
For sure.
I think the thing that would bug me about it is that they'd have all these fucking jank ass pieces on the board and be like, what the fuck is this? And then all of a sudden they'd be like, oh, I've gotten the last piece of Exodia.
Yeah.
And like they fucking do all the things. And then if it was my commander, I'd follow along and I'd be like, you got me. Like, fuck you still. But like, I got there. You'll never do it again because I'm not going to let it happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to take one piece away and then it doesn't work anymore. But like, I think it for the novelty of it, it would be fun. I think at least once seeing it once.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, is it that time of the week? Yeah, I think it's that time of the week, right?
It might be.
I love how you were so confident, and then you were like, wait, is it?
I was like, did we do three? I think we did three.
Tony, it is that time of the week. It's the time of the week that comes every week.
Every motherfucking week, baby girl.
It's the time of the week where we say, Mike.
Mike.
That's me.
That's not your line. What's the salty card of the week?
Salty card of the week this week is
it's a world of scooping, a world of stacks. When you play with me, you won't get that time back. There's so much you can't do as the game nears hour two. It's a salt world after all. It's a salt world after all. Stacks the board until they fall. Never let a spell resolve. It's a salt world.
I wish that last bit was it's a salty world.
Well, you don't write the songs, Tony, so shut up.
No notes, Sam. No notes. Not even one.
That was pretty good, though. I like that.
It was good.
That was it great. Was good. That's fucking
the
right.
The ending could have been better, but, like, you know, as a whole, it was good.
Well, if you
it
have
was...
good taste, I don't think you'd say that. So. obviously, that was It's a Small World After All, which is just from, like, Disney. I don't know who fucking wrote that song. And that was a special request from R2J1. So thank you, R2. We appreciate that. He specifically said, let's get as salty as possible with one of the most annoying songs out there.
Success.
Yep.
It made Tony so salty he had to say something about the lyrical decisions.
I think it mostly made Sam salty that I made a comment about the lyrical decisions.
Bullshit. But well, I have to, before you get into this, I have to say, so in the last episode, we had the Distance cover that I did, the Cake song. And Tony's one note on that episode was how he was like, I think that the music should come in immediately when you start that song. And we had to be like, that's not how the song by Cake goes. So Tony's one critique on the podcast episode was a comment and a critique on, like, the song that Cake wrote, the very popular and successful song.
I mean, Cake, I just want... I want there to be music at the beginning. I don't know what to tell you, Cake. Like, when you're listening to that, like, listen back and be like, should I have done that? Like, you know, you might hear it. You might hear it.
You know, not everything could be Sondheim, you know, Tony?
Nice.
True fucking life.
Well, thanks. Thanks, R2. And thanks, Sam, for the lovely salty song. The salty card of the week this week is Atraxa Grand Unifier.
Ooh, what is that?
So this is the new Atraxa. It's 3 and everything but red, so green, white, blue, black, for a legendary creature, Phyrexian Angel. It's got flying, vigilance, death touch, and lifelink, and it's a 7/7. When it enters the battlefield, reveal the top 10 cards of your library. For each card type, you may put a card of that type from among the revealed cards into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
It's a good one.
It's pretty good.
Is it? Does anybody have salt over this? What the fuck does it do again? When it enters, it gives you fucking...
He just
read
it.
I said the words. I said all of
them. In my mind, I was like, all right, it's got all the, like, keyword flavor bullshit. And, like...
Yes.
You know, it's a 7/7. So, like...
Uh-huh.
Okay, whatever. Did it need to be a fucking 7/7? Probably not.
Tony, like, it's not your turn yet. Mike hasn't asked if this makes you salty.
Shit, you're right.
Tony, how does this one make you feel?
Okay, now you can go.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, Sam. Yeah.
Wow. Come on.
How dare you criticize my song?
Well, you come on too.
This makes me salty because, you know, when Sam, like, does the lyrics and, like, it could be better, but, like, it's just not. I'm like, you know. I feel no.
You don't even know what the card does.
You don't know what the card does.
It enters and you, like, get to fucking draw cards based on, you know, looking at the top shit or whatever. It's just one of those things where it's like I almost don't care. It's
we
it, like
tell.
That exists so much. You know what I mean though? Like those kind of cards where it's like it's just like does a bunch of shit. It's like a big commander. Like if anything makes me salty about it, it's just kind of like boring. Like I don't care that you're gonna like do all these things, whatever, flicker it 10 times and get a bunch of cards. Like I just don't care because I don't find it interesting. So maybe that's like why I feel some amount of salt to it. But to me, it's just like not salty. I'm like, whatever, it's just commander. Could have not been a fucking 7/7 with all that bullshit on it. But like other than that, I'm like, whatever.
Fair complaint. Sam, how about you?
No, this card doesn't really make me salty either. I mean, the design is definitely like pushed. And I think when you first read it, you're like, okay, it lets you draw some cards. Maybe it's not that amazing, but it is like 7 mana. So it's kind of expensive and it's harder to get out. But it actually, like, in practice, the value is fucking insane. And I really only see this at CDH tables. I don't really see this people play this much in casual, which I'm kind of glad about because I think it's a little... pushed for casual. For CDH it's a little bit expensive, but I mean there's some pretty amazing food chain decks out there that run this.
What this do
it can do food chain. It actually often does like Displacer Kitten stuff as
Displacer
well.
Displacer Kitten's big. Even just like cheap flicker spells can be really powerful with it because basically every time you do it you reveal 10 cards and like probably are drawing, you know, 3 to 6 cards or more, you know.
You're trying to hit another way to flicker it.
Yeah.
Like if with the Displacer Kitten, you just have to hit any other cheap non-creature and then you get to do it again.
You just get to chain it. So, I mean, honestly, I think the thing that makes me saltiest about this is that when the CDH deck first came out, I was pretty cold on it. I thought it was kind of bad. But the more I see this in like CDH videos online and at the table, the few times I have played against it, the value this thing generates is fucking crazy. And it's very hard to interact with because you can hang on to those flicker spells and almost use them defensively, where when someone's like, okay, well, let's get rid of the Atraxa, they're like, sweet, I'll just flicker it in response. And now I have like 6 more cards in hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm already running away with it. So it's one of those things that once it comes down, it just goes, it goes fucking crazy. I just don't love Atraxa. Sorry, everybody. I know a lot of you are like weird and horny for Atraxa, but I'm not. I think it's a boring character and a boring design. I've gone on record about this before, but this one is pretty cool. How do you feel about this one, Mike?
Yeah, I think this one is pretty much gets flack for what Tony said of like, it's kind of just a big beater with a bunch of text on it, and it does a bunch of stuff, and it has a bunch of keywords, and it's like kind of epitomizes sort of the like value commander era that I think exists a little bit of like, okay, a whole bunch of the commanders they print need to put cards in your hand or put mana on the board or do these things that are going to enable other stuff. But it's sort of because of that somewhat generic. Like this doesn't steer you towards any kind of game plan or strategy, except for having like a diverse deck composition, which isn't really anything kind of specific. So it's maybe less interesting in that way. Also, Vigilance, Death Touch, Lifelink, flying. This thing is coming and hitting you in the face every time, and it 3-shots people by default because of the whole 21 commander damage thing while gaining all the life. So it is just a huge beater, but I agree. I think it's one of those like too strong for casual kind of cards, or just really hard to fit into a casual shell. It's pretty much always, unless it could be like top end for a 5-color deck or something, but
no OG Nicol Bolas.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the floor of this card is very high, and that makes it hard to play in a casual game fairly, you know? Because like at its base, you're probably drawing 3 to 4 cards. And that's like a low end, right? Because looking at fucking 10 cards, a tenth of your library, like that's a lot. You're definitely pulling some permanents out of
there. You're going to hit a land, a creature, and an enchantment. And it's not permanents, it's card types.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah. So you get instants and sorceries and planeswalkers. So you're getting, and battles.
You're getting your battles.
Dude, you get so many battles.
You're getting all your battles.
The rest go on the bottom, right?
Yes.
Like when you do it. Yeah. Like, how hard is it to do this 10 times? You're going to see, you're probably doing it like fucking 20 times, seeing your deck like twice, like just like running through it, just like without even trying. You know?
Yeah, it's not hard at all. I mean, with Displacer Kitten or even just with
like
some
doing
flickering,
what the deck wants to do, you are naturally just going to go through like your whole fucking deck so fast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Anyway, where does it sit on the list, Mike?
Why don't you throw out some guesses?
I have a guess right here.
I do too.
Shoot them.
My guess is 222.
177 for me.
177.
Ooh.
Tony takes it.
Let's fucking go, baby.
Oh, there you go, bud.
It is 183.
Hey.
Nice. Okay. That's interesting.
I think that's the closest we've gotten to it, you know?
That, no.
I'm pretty sure. Within 5? yes, I think so.
That's very interesting because I don't think that this is as salty as Winota. And like 180-ish is pretty close to 150. Like, to me, that's like within the Winota bubble, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think it really matches up to Winota's power. But I don't know. Maybe people are seeing this at casual tables and it's just running away with the game, kind of like how we've been describing.
That's very similar to what Winota does, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Run away with games at casual tables. So,
yep.
And I'm going to say like the 150 on that end of it, like 150 to 300... I wouldn't be surprised if it's pretty marginal, like the actual like difference between them. Like, obviously there's 150 slots, but like how salty any one of those cards actually makes might make someone. Like,
right,
that's true.
I wouldn't be surprised if I read 300 and I was like, that feels as salty or saltier than this, right?
So it also has a numeric score, right, that runs from 3 to 0 on salt for cards. And card 1 to 150 consumes 3 to 1.5. And then 150 to 300 is 1.5 to 1.25.
Okay.
So they're definitely way more compressed on what all those ratings are. Yeah, they're much more similar in the bottom half of the bracket here.
How many Atraxa Grand Unifier decks are there, Mike? How popular is this commander?
Gotcha. Yeah, and that's not how many decks is it in. That's how many decks are there.
Yeah. It's rank number 53. So what? There's
wow.
Nine, yeah, so there's 9,953
it's over 9,
decks.
Over 9,000.
What 9,000?
I can't believe there's so many fucking basic people. Whatever, I said it. Why did everybody want to build this fucking deck? Why did this come out and then just everybody had it? Is it because everybody had the last Atraxa? So they're like, let's do the new Atraxa now.
Because
like,
people are horny for Atraxa, Tony.
You know what it's got set as a high synergy new card for it? Trouble in Pairs.
we can't get into that. Oh man, that's a whole episode on its own, man. Yeah, the art theft. Ooh, look that shit up. That's fucking fascinating.
Well, thanks for playing. That's it for the salty card of the week.
Thank you, Mike. That was a lovely salty card. And thank you to our listeners out there. And you know we're going to shout out our Salt Packet Plus tier members. And this week we have Thotimus Prime, Rothbox, Bobo Fett, Brandon Mousecop, Chameleon, Captain Kraz, Clearbrook, D. Beeson, Gilgamesh, Doug's Dad, Firehawk Ash, Ebes, Pez, and Vok. Thank you for all your support, guys. We really, really appreciate it. What was that, Tony? Isn't it Karma Chameleon and not Kama Chameleon?
Come on, come on, come on, come on, Chameleon. No. Was that right?
No.
No.
Oh, shit.
None of that was right.
And thank you to all of our other prospectors out there for tuning in every single week to the Howling Salt Mine. We really appreciate all of you listeners out there. If you're looking for more Howling Salt Mine in your life, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Howling Salt Mine, where you can find our Discord through there, our thriving Discord community. We are chatting about spoilers. Man, we just got through a big spoiler week, and it was active. We were chatting a lot. A lot of spicy cards coming in. We have our monthly game nights. We've got a deck list forum where you can get critiques from other prospectors. People are doing pickup games every single week. It's a really awesome community. Love it so, so much. So hop on in if you want to check it out. We also have our Extra Salt show and our Stray Grain show, which is that fun bonus content that you're looking for. So if you've already gone through the entire backlog of the Howling Salt Mine and you're craving more, or if you haven't even gone through the backlog and you just want more of that crazy, funny, zany, those zany little bits that we got, know what I'm saying? Check it out. It's a good time.
Hell yeah. Everyone likes a little zany in their life.
Another way that you can support the show is to send us your salty stories, which I already mentioned at the top of the show. And I'm not going to say it again because Tony will yell at me. So if you forgot where to submit the episodes, why weren't you taking notes? I read the URL to you. I read it. No, wait, that was the Jank Mats URL. Well, fucking support Jank Mats too. I can't read every URL, folks.
I mean, you basically read it. You didn't spell it out for them.
I mostly do read
letter
it every
by
week,
letter.
Actually. Yeah. So go check that out. Send us your salt so we can get it in the queue and read it on a future episode. Another way that you can support the show is to check out our bonfire to get our awesome t-shirt designs. Check out Jank Mats to get our play mats. We don't have those Dragon Shield sleeves up yet, but we're hoping to have that soon. So keep an eye on that shit. Another way you can support the show is to give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app of choice. As you said, Google Podcasts is going away. So we hope that you guys migrate to something like Spotify or Apple Podcasts, where our presence is a little bit bigger. Joining something like that and giving us a 5-star review there helps us stick out in the algorithm. It gives us a bigger presence on those bigger platforms, which is going to show the algorithm that we're a bigger show, and they're going to push us to more listeners that are out there. So that's something that is very easy for you to do. and free and helps us in a huge way. Lastly, you know, we got to shout him out every episode, our buddy Devin Burnett, for giving us this beautiful podcast art. If you're ever in Asheville, North Carolina, hit him up and get a tattoo because he's a really cool guy.
10,000 subscribers are bust.
Bow, 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 bow.
Indeed. Well, thanks again, everybody. And as always, stay salty. And don't forget to draw an additional card during your draw step.
It's the Howling Song Line.
Was that a turkey? Was that a turkey?
Yeah, we need that.
Look at that tongue action there. Okay, if you guys could stop yelling at me, that'd be cool. Okay.
Tony, that's you're Thanks. Doing great. Okay,
it's fine.
I need you to know you're doing really well.
And eat that corn.
Eat that corn, baby.
It's corn.
It's got the juice.
Corn the band.
What's that?
That's what they sound like.
Is it?
Yes. My friend and I have some stuff coming. Come up. Mike. You can't do it every time, man.
If I learned anything from last episode, it's that I can.
Dude, the last episode's bloopers were just, oh man. It's just you being like, oh.
To me, there's a certain like level of salt that you can hit. There's a cap on the level of salt you can hit when it is all legal game actions that are like not taken in a sus way. They're like, you know, there's no gray area shit going on. Like when everyone's just playing cards and, you know, maybe you feel a little bit targeted, there's like a max of how salty that's going to make you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And this gets up in there. But I think I agree. It's kind of a nice level of salt. It's a good flavor.
Did Sam just go get salt from his shed again or whatever? Like,
yes, just cut it. Just fucking cut it.
Are you saying what Mike said made no sense?
I knew it as I was saying. I had it so clearly in my head what I was trying to say, and then every attempt to communicate it was just horrendous. Just absolutely horrendous.
I feel like that never happens to you. It's very rare that happens to you. So right, I was just taken aback that it happened at all.
I was just expecting to have and then you kept to doing say, it. Cut it.
Yeah, and then I got okay. your back. I did
I was
it for
just
you.
Gonna say it all shitty and then in the edit cut it. But now I have to try and think out how to actually say it.
Oh man.
That's nice. Brutal. Well,
do you want another try?
No.
Let's I don't even know how to transition.
Well, should we move on to the next one, guys?
Let's do that.
That was some good salt. Let's keep going.
Let's do it.
That was fucking funny, dude. That's gonna be the longest blooper we've ever had. Just a good like minute or two. Oh man.
It'll make as much sense out of context of the blooper as it does in the fucking moment.
Absolutely will.
Nice.
Oh my god. That's fucking good. Holy shit. All right. Compose myself here.